I'm Gab, he's Jules. It's blue skies over West London, Jules, because Euro 2020 has reached the knockout Woo-hoo! Phase. It's now mano a mano.
Yes.
It's two men enter, one man leaves.
Yeah.
This is it. This is it. No more looking at what's happening on their pitch. No more, ooh, what are the third place permutations?
No.
Screw all that.
Draw We're your done. Best. No.
All right, so we will be looking back at what took us here. We will be putting together our best 11 of the group stage.
Yes.
But first, let's look at the draw. Let's look at what awaits. Game starting on Saturday right through Tuesday.
You know the real Euro starts now, right?
Yeah, that's the what people tournament say. Starts I like, now. I like my group
this
stage
is the big
too.
Boy stuff. But before was a bit like, oh, come on. Now we're getting serious.
This is for grown-ups. So I'm just looking at my draw here. I'll start top. Belgium against Portugal. I need some percentages from you because we've learned from 2016, do not bet against Cristiano and Portugal. On the other hand, Belgium were my pre-tournament pick to win it all.
Yeah.
And I see no reason to change that based on what they showed me in the group stage.
No, I thought Portugal showed some positives against France. Certainly in the first half, they lost their way in the second half a bit. But in the first half, I thought Renato Sanchez brought a lot. It was a bit more the
old Portugal. Let's have Renato Sanchez going forward. We don't need to review the France-Portugal game.
Bruno Fernandes was dropped, which is important. No, but that's got an impact.
Is Bruno Fernandes getting back in?
No, that's what I'm talking. So let me talk. Bruno Fernandes being dropped, I think, was big because it's a bit of the old Portugal, and that's the way to play against this Belgium team. And I think if they can do again that first half against France, against Belgium, I think they can cause them trouble. Then Lukaku is so good, and KDB is so good, and even Eden Hazard is going back with Witzel to almost full fitness. That I agree with you, Belgium should be favourite, and our favourite, maybe like 60-40, I would say, but you're right, you can't count out Portugal in this kind of the new old direction that they're going.
Sorry for interrupting you. I just had to point out the Bruno Fernandes bias here. You know, no, I agree with you. He's not been effective. And it's just not a good fit, this setup with Bruno Fernandes.
Yeah.
I don't expect we're going to see him start against Belgium. If we had to do percentages, what do we say?
60-40, do you think?
I go even a little higher.
Are you be worried about, for example, the Belgium we saw in the first half against Denmark, where they were on the back foot, making mistakes at the back? We saw the goal came from that Denayer really poor pass, but still they were put under pressure, couldn't get out of the press. Does that worry you a little bit, or you think once KDB is there and Witzel is there, it's a different team anyway?
I think they can pass through the press. I don't think Portugal have the players to press them in the same way. Again, not a knock on Cristiano, but you don't want Cristiano running around chasing defenders, not because he can't do it, but because it's not good use of Cristiano. Italy against Austria. Italy,
you're happy, aren't you? You're happy. I can tell the smile on your face.
I'm not used to seeing an Italy team win three group games and play this well. Not in the group stage.
Fair
so
enough.
They're all well rested. I'm assuming he's going to go back to the original version. I think one question might be Verratti, one question might be Chiellini, a fit. Overwhelming favorites against Austria.
Austria have no chance unless really something happens and that they turn into this very solid defensive team. But even in the last game that they, in all the games that they played, whether they the two that they won or the one that they heavily lost, they look shaky at the back. I just can't see them being able to cope with the intensity, the running, the movement of this very, very good Italian team.
Percentage?
85-15. And I think we are kind to Austria.
France, Switzerland on paper. Again, another team in blue, which has won the World Cup and the Euros before, against another Alpine nation. How about that, right? I can make even more. There is a German-speaking part of Italy, and there is a French-speaking part of Switzerland, right?
Yeah. So they're cousins. We all cousins.
So many parallels there. Exactly. Yeah. Probably the four best skiing countries in Europe. By a country mile, I would say, right?
Yeah, as well.
I'm not talking proper skiing, not cross country. No disrespect to Jan and our Norwegian friends.
Yeah, no, that doesn't count.
Again, overwhelming favorites.
I think so. It has to be another 85-15, really. I don't see how this Swiss team, although they were good against the Turks and Shaqiri, who is the key there, was good. I still don't think, even with their three at the back, that can frustrate maybe France a little bit. I don't think they can.
Yeah,
they can push enough trouble to win.
I'm going 85% again.
Yeah, I agree.
I know Petkovic can draw up complicated defensive things to go and mess you up, but he hasn't done it thus far in the tournament. That midfield that I had high hopes for, Freuler and Xhaka, they haven't done it. Mbolo had a game where he was very good, a game where he was terrible.
Just
too much uncertainty.
Yeah, and I think the French will hit their peak fitness-wise now. I think you saw them with a bit leggy legs with all the fitness work that they've done before the tournament and even in this first round. And I just think that this is when France are good. This is what they do. They love those knockout games, one in, one out, like you said, or two wins, one out. And I think they will be very good against the Swiss that don't have much of a chance.
Speaking of leggy legs in France, just to complete this, who's going to play left back?
Yeah,
it doesn't really matter because the answer is France don't play with a left back because they play four central defenders. Honestly, you got Koundé on the right, Pavard on the left, and you're set.
Yeah,
Bob's your mother's brother.
He could do that or move Kimpembe left. I think Lucas Hernandez will be able to play. He would be fit. It's a knee problem, but more of a knock kind of thing than Ding. You have to feel for Ding because they told him at halftime, hey, you're going to come on. He rushed his warm-up, was not ready. Played 5 minutes, got injured.
I do feel for him because he is one of the good ones.
He is one of the good ones.
Croatia against Spain now.
Interesting.
You know my thoughts on Lucho.
Me too.
I think Spain have played much, much better than the results.
Completely.
Obviously, the penalty misses don't help. The Morata misses don't help.
Yeah.
So I feel like they're a bit underrated. So, and I've seen Croatia play twice in person, and they've been distinctly underwhelmed. However, I get that niggly Modric magic feeling tournament time that we saw in the last World Cup too. So I can't give Spain more than 60%.
No, I think 60-40 is fair because of the Modric factor, because of the experience factor as well. This is a very, very experienced Croatian team and it's a very inexperienced Spanish team, if you think about it. Apart from, you know, Busquets, for example. But the rest, Unai Simon, Pedri, just to name a few, even someone like Sarabia.
What if we see Eric Garcia and...
Eric Garcia, yeah, as well.
Laporte
I think the experience could play a part. But again, Spain will have to play with their tempo and their intensity, which I don't think Croatia can match. But if you let Croatia play with their own tempo, a bit like what Scotland did too much, then I think they can take the game away from you. So
I think Luis Enrique...
60-40 is good.
Yeah, he's a genius, but I can't go past 60.
No, he's
good.
Because
he also scares me when he starts doing weird things with the lineup. Whatever. I won't get it. We'll have time to talk about this.
Yeah.
Wales against Denmark.
Nice. No. That's nice. It's a nice game.
Okay. I'm not going to patronize these teams.
It's a nice game.
I think there is a risk that this becomes one-way traffic. If we see Wales the way they've played in some of the group games, eight men behind the ball, and then rely on Bale and Ramsey. Daniel James to run with it and Kiefer Moore to go and run into people. Is that enough to beat Denmark? Denmark, a great story. Pre-tournament, they were my dark horses. Obviously, after what they went through with Eriksen, there's no Eriksen, but then you have Damsgaard. Damzinho, who's done pretty well.
Yeah.
Came back after losing their first two group games. We got to go with Denmark as favourites here, right?
Yeah, I think slightly favourite. Because I think the Welsh...
55, 60%?
Yeah, 55, 60. I think the Welsh would be very happy not to be favourite. Very happy to be the outsiders. Very happy to play their game, which is, being solid and then relying a lot on your stars. But they played so well against Turkey that way that they can do it again against Denmark. There's no reason why not. Italy were too good. No problem. But I think they can certainly copy a bit the game that they had against Turkey to face those Danes. So I think Denmark have to be slightly favourite because they've got overall better players.
You're going as high as 60 or
55-45? I think it's fair. It's fair because I would not pass it the Welsh to do this again.
I'm gonna go 60. Holland against the Czech Republic. Okay.
Wow.
So our views on Frank de Boer, I think, are well known.
Well known, best manager in the world.
Three wins out of three in the group stage. I think it's fair to say a lot of things broke their way.
Yeah.
Looking at this draw, I kind of feel like, hey, look, things are breaking his way again, right?
Yeah, completely.
It's lucky to be good and it's good to be lucky.
Exactly. Exactly. They've got too much legs, too much movement, intensity,
too much Marlin now as well.
Yeah. And I think where they will struggle eventually is against team that can put them under pressure on defensive transition because they put so many men forward because it's a bit crazy football where there's not much of a structure to it or control, that's how they're vulnerable. But that's not what the Czech do. They don't have that pace up front. They don't go quickly in offensive transition. So I think the Dutch will win that game easy.
What percentage of the game? 70?
More than that. It has to be 80-20. The Czechs are not very good.
I'm going to go a little lower. I'm going to say 70%.
No.
Finally, the two games on Tuesday. We will be referring to these games, talking to them again on Monday, so we'll go a bit quicker with these. But it's Sweden against Ukraine.
Yeah.
You don't seem to be excited by this game as much as I am.
I could not care less.
Okay.
Isak is my boy, and you and I love him, and we followed him a lot this season with...
What about the magic elf, Emil Forsberg?
No.
This is
the one game that just doesn't do it for me whatsoever.
I think Sweden match up pretty well with Ukraine. I think Ukraine probably overall have more technical players. But Sweden are very, very well drilled. You know, they can go and sit and they can bore you that way and wear you down. But they can also, I think, take advantage of set pieces. I think there is real quality in Forsberg. He has to be dealt with. Once he's lit up.
And Kulusevski made a good entrance against
Poland. And now you've got the Kulusevski wild card as well. Yeah. So I think Sweden 55-45 in this game.
That's fair.
Finally, England against Germany.
Ooh.
The hype machine in full swing. There's a lot of history about this.
Of course.
We don't need to go through every Euro 96 and 1966 World Cup.
Yeah.
The
2010 World Cup as well, you know.
Yes, and the goal that wasn't.
The goal that wasn't,
whatever.
Was and...
All right. I'm just going to ask you a question, though, that it's one of those things that it's one of the pieces we have on the website. Where we were asked... you know, which team among the big ones has the highest ceiling? In other words, can improve the most?
Yeah.
Or has been punching most below its weight? And I think it's got to be one of these two teams, England and Germany.
Yeah.
The problem is, I ask myself, can they get to where they want to be, given where they are right now? So you've got, with Germany, you have a manager who was once great, who seems really completely delegitimized because of some of the performances. And with England, you have a manager who... He's a nice guy. He's a likable guy. He has the courage of his convictions. Fine. Changes the team every single game and has a lot of trouble actually scoring goals.
He's not very good. Yeah.
Is that?
No, I think for me, England, when you look at them play and when you look at the talent that they have, this is not good enough. They should be playing so much better. Playing so much better with other strength than what they've showed so far. This is a team that is capable of playing with far more intensity than what they've showed so far, with pressing far more than what they've done. Yeah. I don't understand why Southgate doesn't see it. So for me, the room for improvement is massive, and you might not get it over a week because you just prepare for the next game. It's not proper training. However, if he finds the right formula, there's so much more coming from this England team. But for me, this is 50-50, Gab. It has to be 50-50.
Yeah, I would go with that, too. It is one of the mysteries of this England team, about how people go on about, oh, the Premier League, the intensity, blah, blah, blah. And then England, who are mostly made up, in fact, exclusively made up of England players, except for Sancho, who is, you know, the ugly kid in the corner who doesn't get to play, are actually the team that, among of the big countries, probably presses the least in this tournament.
It's crazy.
Well, no, actually, they do press more than France.
But the French don't
need to press.
You know, only Finland and Hungary had less shot in this tournament than England. Less shot. You don't even shoot. The expected goals in the second half against the Czech, zero. Zero expected goals over 45 minutes in a Euro group games at home. That's just, I don't get it. And that's why I'm really hoping that they will find the right way of playing against these German teams. Otherwise, I can see Germany winning this. I really do.
Stay tuned. I have a question. I'm sure we'll be speaking about this clash some more. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Jules, time to do our combined 11 yes. of the group stage so far. Sure to draw controversy and hate, but we've got 4-3-3 because most of the better teams, and yeah. we're going to shoehorn people into that formation. Sorry. Only way to do this.
Yes, only way to do this. Let's say he hasn't really been a great tournament so far. You agree, right?
I think it's been a really good tournament, actually.
I don't think he's been. In terms of quality, you think he's been good?
I think it's been good. But whatever. That's not what we're debating here.
Yeah.
Who's your goalkeeper?
I went for Olsen.
Robin Olsen.
Yeah, Robin Olsen. Because I think the Swedes have been, as you said earlier in the show, good defensively. He's made some really, really impressive saves against Spain,
yeah,
especially.
I'm not going to argue that. I mean, you could look at, obviously, there's other countries that haven't conceded a single goal. Jordan Pickford hasn't conceded a goal. Yeah. Donnarumma hasn't conceded a goal. But I think Olsen has been a real difference maker. So I'm with you on that. Right back. Are you going to go with Denzel?
We have to go with Denzel, although we need to explain again that right wing back and right back are two very different positions.
Yes.
But he's been fantastic on that right hand side, let's put it that way, for the Netherlands. Often more attacking than defending, really. But still, I think.
Shout out to Hufal as well. Yeah. Our center backs, you know what? I'm just going to leave with this. I'm going to go with Leo Bonucci because I think he surpassed my expectations
That's
in those
true.
Three games. And
That's true.
I'm going to go with Simon Kjær.
Yeah.
Partly it's an emotional choice about the way he reacted and whatever, but I think he's been very good in the other games as well.
I agree with you. I had Kjær too. I think Bonucci makes sense because like you said, you know, even if the opposition was not the greatest, he did well. I think Kimpembe has done well too, certainly against the Germans where he was very solid. Even against Hungary, it was not his fault or anything. But Bonucci, Kjær makes a lot of sense.
Left back.
There can only be one. There can only be Spinazzola.
Yeah, I gotta be. I mean, I think Augustinsson's played well. I want to give a shout out to him. Thorgan Hazard, I thought, had his moments, but yeah.
And Gusens was fantastic against Portugal, but only
there's one game and the other two games. Yeah.
And there's something nice about a right footer who plays a left back, like Spinazzola. You know, like all of that. Spinazzola has been great.
Now, this is, I think, the highest quality position. We've got three slots in central midfield. We have a lot of candidates.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with the one I think we both agree on. Got to be Gini Wijnaldum, yeah?
Yeah, I think Wijnaldum for sure. Not just the goals, but the leadership, the running, the everything.
All right. Who are the other two spots? Did Pogba convince you? Did he push himself over the line?
Yeah, Pogba was fantastic.
Two good games out of three. Is that enough to have him?
And even against Hungary, I think people have been a bit harsh. And he was not bad against Hungary at all. But he was fantastic against Portugal. That ball for Benzema on the goal is great. The ball on the Hummels' own goal is fantastic. So Pogba, for sure, one of the players of the tournament
so far. All right, candidates for the other spots. I got Jorginho. I have Locatelli.
Yeah.
For Aaron Ramsey. I have Koke.
Yeah.
Luka Modric coming alive in that final game.
Final game, but a bit disappointed before against England.
Yes.
And even against the Czechs as well.
Who do we go for?
Locatelli.
Gotta be Loca.
It got to be Locatelli because, again, you know, he's a young player, first tournament. If Verratti had been fit, he would not have been started, and yet he took his chance and shown so well.
All right. Two wide forward stroke attacking midfielder types. And we're not going to do the thing where we cram in an extra center forward by making him play on the wing, right? We agreed not to do that. We're going to treat center forward separately and face the flak because of that. So who you got there?
So Lukaku has to be there, really, because...
So you want him to go center forward?
Center forward first, sorry.
Let's go wide midfielder first.
Wide midfielder first.
Wide or attacking midfielder, whatever you want to call it.
So Kevin De Bruyne, because he played only a game and a half, but the way he changed the whole game against Denmark after coming on a half-time was incredible. The goal and the assist, but especially the assist and that first touch, amazing. And then in the last game, showing all the talent and everything. And he's going to be good from now on as well. So for me, De Bruyne is one of the two for sure.
I really like Perisic as well. I think he's quietly had a really good tournament.
Yeah.
Really been a real difference maker for him. Memphis Depay, I think, has been has been,
I think,
very good and should be there. Shout out to Damsgaard as well.
Of course. Sterling with his two goals. I know there was not much more than the two goals. Yeah, but come on, Gab. You still have to score the two goals.
Right. So who goes with De Bruyne?
Can we have, because then that means we would have only one centre forward and
Cristiano. No, we can't.
Can we have Cristiano?
No.
Why?
Because Cristiano's playing up front.
Oh, my God.
Okay, let's go De Bruyne and Depay then. I think that's fair.
All right.
Depay, again, has been good playing
that works
more
for
centrally
me.
With Weghorst. But still.
We gave our honorable mentions.
Yeah.
And finally, at centre forward, I sense a problem because Alexander Isak's been magnificent.
Yeah.
Patrick Schick scored 3 goals, including a goal of the universe.
The goal of
contender.
The universe, yeah.
Lukaku, I think, has been pretty much unplayable. And Cristiano is a top scorer in the tournament with 5 goals.
In 3
And
games.
If we don't pick Cristiano, all the boo boys will come after us.
True. So that's why I wanted Lukaku and Cristiano both.
Yeah,
the
I know. That's a cop-out. You can't do it. We can only have one centre forward.
I would go for Cristiano simply because of the opposition. Because I think Lukaku has been fantastic. For me, it's between Lukaku and Cristiano. Lukaku has been great, but Cristiano has faced France, Germany, and Hungary. He scored 5 goals in 3 games. Okay, so
3 of them were penalties.
3 are penalties, but still, it's also the leadership.
One of them in garbage time.
I know, but he's just equal Ali Daei all-time records for international goals in men's football. He's 36 and a half. Do you see what I mean? It's just like, wow.
That puts it over the top because ultimately there is no arguing with 5 goals in 3 games. You still have to put the penalties away, which, as Mr. Morata has shown us, isn't always the easiest thing to do. All right, enough best 11, Jules. How about some quick hits?
Let's go, Gab.
But first, it's Lionel Messi's birthday. I'm just acknowledging this. A lot of outlets reporting that his contract signing with Barcelona is imminent. Breaking news as we're recording this. If it happens, we will talk about it on Monday once we have all the facts. How about that? Right, Portugal and France battled to a 2-2 draw. Jules, was this a fair result?
I think it was in the end, and everybody would be happy with it, Gab. I thought France in the second half were the better team. Portugal were the better team in the first half. There was a lot of penalties. There could have been more because I think right at the end, the foul of Bruno Fernandes on Coman is a penalty 100%.
Yeah, that kind of makes up for the rather Fugazi, Mbappe one, right?
Yeah, I guess so. Compensation there. But Pogba was fantastic. Renato Sanchez was very good as well. We saw Karim Benzema finally scoring and Cristiano scoring too to equal the record of Ali Daei. So overall good. Just quickly, my moment of the game though was Pepe just before Benzema took his penalty showing Rui Patricio, he's going to shoot here on your right hand side, he's going to shoot here. Benzema did shot here, but Patricio went the other way. And then Pepe went to see him and said, I told you, man, what did you do?
Let's not be harsh on Rui Patricio. He made some big saves.
So talking about this game and Cristiano Ronaldo, he scored twice, as we said, to equal Ali Daei's records. Of 109 goals, Gab, although he needs another 77 before the end of his career to equal Christine Sinclair, who holds the records for the women's game.
Could be even more because Christine Sinclair hasn't actually retired yet.
Yeah,
and
true.
She's older. She's 38 years old, apparently. I had to look it up. I think knowing what we know about Cristiano, I wouldn't be surprised if once he breaks Ali Daei's record, he's like, wait, there's another human being who scored more international goals than I have?
I can't have that.
I need to keep going.
Yes.
Jules, now I told you Spain and my main man Luis Enrique would come good. It's a 5-0 romp past Slovakia.
It is. Who's that, Gap?
Okay, all right.
Yeah,
all
that's
right,
Dubravka.
Right,
come on. That was a great first goal. But Spain were fantastic. And we've been saying from the beginning they play better than what people say. They play better than the result showed. And now they hit form. Busquets coming back was big. I thought he dictated the tempo so well there. And you know what? I would not want to face them later in the tournament for sure. Drama in Munich for Germany, Gab, and it takes a late goal from Leon Goretzka for Jogi Löw to avoid a defeat, draw 2-2, and move on. That wasn't good enough, Gab.
Yeah, shout out to Hungary. I thought they played really well. But
it was so hard to take for them.
This was a terrible performance from Germany, and I think we kind of saw the end of Jogi Löw because at 1-0 down, needing a win because of events, needing a result because of events elsewhere, there's no plan. He just chucks on every single attacking player.
Literally.
He finished the game with Timo Werner, Kevin Folland, Thomas Muller,
Musiala.
Goretzka, Musiala. Timo Werner was playing left back at the end. Leroy Sané was playing right back. I mean, it was just an ultimate Hail Mary. A lot of drama on the day. Like, Germany can play better. They can come good. We'll see what happens. But and I wrote a whole piece about this. Yogi Löw does not want to be remembered as the guy who stuck around too long. And there was a risk that we were heading that
big
way.
Time.
Sweden ended up topping the group thanks to a late goal and a 3-2 win over Poland. Jules, Lewandowski did what he could.
He scored two, Gab, missed a huge one as well, probably the miss of the tournament so far. But what do you want him to do? He's on his own. He can't be at the start and at the end of every move. So
why, Cristiano did that, didn't he?
I think Cristiano has a better supporting cast than Lewandowski. But it's sad because you would want him in the next run and he's not going to be there. Back to Munich, Gab. UEFA got hammered for that decision to not allow the mayor of the city to light up the Allianz Arena with the rainbow flag for the Germany-Hungary game in protest about the rules against homophobia or for homophobia in Hungary.
Yeah, I just want to be very clear about this. I actually have a lot of sympathy here with UEFA because they have a rule saying like no political displays are allowed. Yeah. I do not think, and UEFA do not think, that support for LGBTQ causes, support for inclusion, is a political clause. It is a shared value that everybody has, a little bit like the fight against racism. However, in this case, the mayor of Munich, and this makes me wonder about his motives, he wrote to them and saying, oh no, I want to light up the stadium specifically because I disagree with the law that was passed in the Hungarian parliament. I disagree with that law too. I think it's shameful. But you've brought it into the political sphere when you've said, this is why I want to do it. He didn't do it for the previous games. He did it for that reason. So at that point, UEFA were stuck between a rock and a hard place. I think it's great that a lot of people came out, brought flags with them, showed their support. Yeah. I'll even back to the guy who ran onto the pitch before kickoff with the flag.
Manuel Neuer's armband.
Manuel Neuer's been consistent throughout. Yeah, yeah. I mean, hats off to him. But I think we need to be very, very clear that once you're aiming this at a specific political decision, this is a job that the European Union needs to do. This is a job for politicians at this stage. I'm not comfortable with a sporting governing body taking a line against a specific law passed in a sovereign nation. European Union, by the way, has weighed in on this. They've called it shameful. Hopefully there will be action taken.
Yeah.
I would love to see support for LGBTQ causes and the LGBT community just be part and parcel of this. But once you aim it specifically at a specific country, you're asking UEFA to do something which is beyond its remit. So I know some people may disagree with that, but you know, I think that is the full story here. England beat the Czech Republic 1-0 to advance as group winners. Jules, another minimalist performance from Gareth Southgate's crew?
Completely. I want to give him a pass because I don't want people to think that like every time we hammer him. But this is just not good enough for me. We said, please, you know, go for sexy football, go with play with flair. And we got 5 minutes and the Jack Grealish cross and the Sterling goal and then pretty much that was
it. At least we got to see a lot of Grealish and even a tiny bit of Sancho.
And Saka played great.
But then
in the second half, you've got zero expected goals. There's no shot. There's nothing happening. We're all falling asleep. It's ridiculous. Anyway, emotional scenes, on the other hand, at the Parken Stadium in Copenhagen, Gab, as Denmark get their first points to advance against Russia in a 4-1 win that, with a goal difference, made them that they qualify for the next round.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's like shades of 1992 when they weren't even in the tournament. They're on holiday. They all came back. To see them on the pitch at the end of the final whistle after what they've been through, just a few steps away from where, you know, Christian Eriksen had collapsed earlier in the tournament. That was absolutely fantastic, absolutely emotional. They get another shot at this. And, you know, I think a lot of neutrals now are ready to adopt Denmark.
Definitely.
3 wins in 3 for Belgium, who beat Finland 2-0. Jules, you caught up with Roberto Martinez afterwards. Was he gloating?
He was very happy, but like he said, they really went from strength to strength. The way they started against Russia, then the games against Denmark, really poor first half, but much better second half once, especially De Bruyne came on. And then that last win against Finland, you feel for the Finns a bit because they played so well and they could have gone into the last 16. But Belgium, I know they're your winning favourites.
Pre-tournament pick.
Exactly, and I think they will be very, very strong. The Dutch are also 3-for-3, Gab, after their win against North Macedonia. It's your turn now to praise, if you want to,
Frank de Boer, the best manager in the world.
You can only be what's in front of you, is all I'm going to say, and they've done it really well so far. Yeah. Let's move
well
on.
Well done.
Luka Modric turns back the clock with a stunning goal. Croatia beat Scotland, and they're through. Jules, you love the Tekkers.
Oh, my God, Luka, you made me love you even more. I didn't think it was possible, but that outside of the right foot was fantastic, and is the way he controlled that game. The little maestro was back, and it's always good to see him in that kind of form. Austria also through with a 1-0 win over Ukraine, not as good as the way Modric played. And this was tight. Really.
It was tight. It was boring. Austria through. Let's move on. They play Italy. Jules, we can add Julian Lopetegui to the long list of managers to turn down Tottenham Hotspur. This is messed up that it's almost July. The transfer window opens July 1st. They do not have a manager. Why? Why are we in this position?
It's so embarrassing, Gab. And not just what you said, but also that the preseason will start at the beginning of July. So what the players,
I hope Ryan Mason's still under contract.
It must be. But like, what if you're the player, what are you thinking? You know, like, what do we go back? Who is there to take charge? What do we do? It's a mess because I think they went for targets that were never going to happen. They were not realistic targets.
I don't know. To be perfectly honest, they could have had Gattuso. I don't think it would have been a good choice, but they could have had Gattuso. They could have definitely had Paulo Fonseca. They had the contracts ready for Paulo Fonseca.
They could not have Nagelsmann. They could not have Pochettino. They could not have Conte. It's as many names.
No, that's
names
fine. But Fonseca was 2 weeks ago, right?
Unrealistic. Yeah.
So they did go Fonseca, for some people who were more realistic. They could have Rafa if they wanted him.
But Fonseca is the biggest, the worst of all of them, because there you have a manager that fits a lot of what you want, unlike a lot of the others, and yet suddenly you make that U-turn and you go, oh, actually, you know what? Thanks, but no thanks. And now you're in this mess, which is embarrassing for your club. A lot of your fans have renewed their season tickets because they thought you're going to get Conte. And now you've got Bob, who is at the shop and also cut the grass. And now you can be the manager. I mean, come on.
There's an obvious element to this because we know Daniel Levy is the main decision maker. But obviously he brought in Fabio Paratici to help him with the search.
Yeah.
What? Are they not on the same page?
So we know they're clearly not on the same page. Not on the same page with, you know, as we saw with Gattuso.
This is bad.
This is crazy. Earlier this week, everybody ran with a report and the story that City were preparing a 100 million offer for Harry Kane.
Everybody, but not us, not the Gavin Jules show.
Not the Gavin Jules show. Yeah, we were maybe a bit skeptical. And now our colleague Rob Dawson on the website reports that City are ready to wait another year before trying to get Harry Kane. I guess you're not surprised by that, no?
Yeah, I mean, look, reading between the lines on Rob's piece, I think it's more City, by the way, not necessarily confirming that they made the £100 million bid.
No, because Spurs saying that they didn't.
Spurs say we haven't received any bid. Yeah. Maybe they're still preparing it. I don't know. I don't quite know what you need to do to prepare. Like, you know, if it's 100 million, it's got to be cash, right? So you just write 1-0, whatever.
You know when you take the train at the station and he says, on the board, it says preparing.
Yeah, exactly.
And sometimes it takes a long time. I don't know whether it's the same for City, they're preparing, he says on the board.
It's not like they need to sell players to get the 100 million, right? They do have an owner and just write a check for 100 million. But we said this all along. The guy has 3 years left on his contract, right? He doesn't have any leverage to demand a move, unless he wants to throw a tantrum and say, I'm going to refuse to play for the club I've supported since birth. Okay, fine. That's how you can force a move.
You're right.
But I don't see Harry Kane doing that. So no. I don't know who's advising him. Well, reports suggest that it's his family members. Maybe they don't have a lot of experience in this. This is not the way you get a move. And from City's perspective, Dawson is reporting that City think that 100 million may not be enough this summer, but it might be enough next summer. I'll tell you what, City, I think, will still buy a center forward if they don't get Harry Kane.
Yeah, I agree.
And next summer, if that center forward does well, there may not be room for Harry Kane. Simple as. Bild in Germany report that Manchester United have made a 90 million euro bid for Jadon Sancho, which, funnily enough, Jules, matches Borussia Dortmund's asking price.
Here we go.
Now, this has gone on forever. We've been told all along. We've been reported. I've been told by people close to the club. Jan Agafjortov has spoken to people closer to the club, close to Sancho, that personal terms are agreed.
Yeah.
So now, if Dortmund wanted 90 million and they've offered 90
they've
million
got
euros,
it.
Does it mean that it's done?
It is happening, Gab. It will be done very soon. I actually thought that he would have been done.
Why not now? What do they need to do?
No, it's all good. I think you just lawyers we'll take the contracts, go through the structure of the deal, I think, which take, which I think took the longest of that time with all the add-ons and bonuses. But it's done. They want to sell him. They want to buy him. He wants to go to United. This is perfect. And I think this is a good amount of money for Jadon Sancho at his age and what he can bring to that team, Old Trafford. So, yeah, I think they should be ready to have a new number. What number is available?
I don't know what number he wants to wear, but I'll tell you what. Would it be funny if the minute he becomes a Premier League player, the minute he becomes a United player, he suddenly starts for England?
Yeah, it was, and maybe Southgate didn't start him, so his price would stay at this level because had he done really well, Dortmund could have said, actually, you know what, he's better than we thought. Give us an extra 20 million.
Agent Gareth?
Exactly.
We joke, Gareth.
We're only joking.
Yeah, relax. Know,
playing the United cards. Inter Milan have signed Akan Çalhanoğlu as a free agent from crosstown rival Milan. Gab, do you like this deal? And how is this going to go down for the derby with Milan fans?
I think, look, Çalhanoğlu has been at times very good, at times not so good. He's been inconsistent. Milan put a value on him. It was 4 million euros a season net. Inter offered 25% more than that, so he took the deal. I've praised Milan for sticking to their guns. I don't think Çalhanoğlu at his age is worth 5 million euros a year net. In pandemic, doesn't change the fact Milan need to find an alternative. From Inter's perspective, it's a free. The insurance will be paying Christian Eriksen's salary until he comes back. So you can slot Çalhanoğlu in there, even save a little bit of money because Çalhanoğlu makes about a third less than Eriksen. Yeah. It's not a long term view, but you know we don't know what's going to happen with Eriksen. They need somebody to replace him. True. Obviously, Milan needs somebody in that position, and I'll be curious to see how they operate with that. They're trying to...
Ziyech, maybe?
Hakim Ziyech has been mentioned. I think he'd be a tremendous signing. I wouldn't be surprised. I think Ziyech is an upgrade on Çalhanoğlu,
definitely,
frankly. So, you know, maybe Milan do come out ahead if they play their cards right.
Mm.
Meanwhile, the Ashraf Hakimi saga rumbles on at Paris Saint-Germain.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know why you put rumbles on. I think the deal is very close to be done. Uh-huh. PSG up the offer, Leonardo and
how much? What are they actually?
Because 70 million euros. And you know what? Inter,
is that net? Sorry, 70 million cash.
Yeah, and Inter are going to say, hey, thank you very much. The most expensive fullback in the history of the game. I think it's you overpay, but he's your only choice if you want to strengthen that position at right back or right wing back, whatever, that right-hand side channel. So I really expect PSG are very confident this one will go through. Leonardo is very confident. And Inter need that money too. And right now, only PSG is offering anything for Hakimi or for anybody else in that squad.
If they go to 70 million for Hakimi, then, yeah, I think Inter, because they need the cash, I'm okay with it. I would have rather sold Lautaro. I think strikers are easier to replace, weirdly, than people like this. But maybe there was no market. So, fine. I mean, they're in a hole. They need real cash money.
The Madrid press seems certain that Sergio Ramos will either go to Manchester United or to PSG. As you are certain, Gab?
No, I'm not as certain.
Thank you. Me neither.
Look, this is one thing I never get about people at this stage of their career. We've seen it with Zlatan and others. I have no idea how much Sergio Ramos expects to be paid from his next contract. He obviously famously said after the fact that he would have played for free for Real Madrid. That's fine. They put a contract in front of you. It wasn't for free. It was a big pay cut. You didn't consider it. So I don't know what to read into it. If I'm Ramos, I think I can help either team because I think still he is a better player, but equally there's a price on it. You're coming off a long injury. I'd love somebody to go and put their money where their mouth is. And say, you know what? I made so much money in my career. The clock is ticking. I want to play for one of these two iconic clubs. I don't care.
But he's not going to do that.
I'll pay for $500,000 plus bonuses, you know, just for the experience of doing it.
Yeah.
Right? Go out and show me something like that. I'm tired of all these athletes talking about, it's such a dream come true.
I know.
At this stage, you know, you've made more money. You've made enough money. You have nothing to prove. You've won the Champions League. You've won the World Cup. You've done everything, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, something tells me it's not going to happen. And something tells me that neither United nor Paris Saint-Germain are going to necessarily go and say, oh, yeah, I need to give you, you know, 15 million euros a year net.
Yeah, you're right.
I don't think
the,
so.
The thing is, United.
I don't think they should.
United need a centre back as a starter. Mm-hmm. An improvement on Lindelof, for example, and Maguire. PSG already have Marquinhos and Kimpembe. So for PSG's point of view, why would you go and spend all that money on someone who's 35 years old, who's going to be on the bench? Because there's no way he can come in and replace one of those two.
Well, if he's fit and on top of his game, he's better than Kimpembe.
Come on.
If you get the best Sergio Ramos.
I would pretend I didn't hear this.
Staying in Madrid, Martin Ødegaard says they want him back. Does this mean no Arsenal and no move to the Premier League? Or is it just like when Gareth Bale says, oh, I got to go back?
He has to go back anyway. He's under contract, so there's no choice. If someone makes a big offer, 50 million euros or something, maybe Real Madrid will let him go. What's for sure is that Carlo said, hey, you want to play? Let me show you what you can do. You can come in the rotation in that midfield three, no problems at all. I think Carlo will be happy to work with whoever the club gives him anyway. So I don't think it's Ancelotti's choice if he stays or goes. And then it's down to Ødegaard as well. I think
they need him in that rotation, right?
They need
so that they have their three.
But he
starters.
Might not want to be their gap. And in that case, if
yeah,
he wants,
he will
to
be
move,
the first option to come in.
If
to
I
replace.
Was him, I would stay 100%.
No question.
Alexander Isak has a 70 million euro release clause, which is less than 60 million pound gap, even in COVID time. This looks like a really good deal now for someone who has that kind of money.
As you know, I'm very negative about the numbers, and I think everybody overpays and whatever. I will make an exception for Isak because he's shown, not just last season, but the year before, that he can score a ton of goals. He's, what, 21, 22 years old?
Yeah, 21.
He's smart. He's had, you know, I don't know if he'll ever be the new Ibra, as people said, just because he was tall and he can trap a ball. He's showing again at Euros his value.
Yeah.
I think he'll retain his value. I think he would be an absolutely tremendous signing. And I'll tell you what, if I'm Manchester City, you know what?
100%.
100%. 100%. I take this guy and I let Pep
imagine
work
Pep
with,
working
him
with him
and see what he can do.
I'm with you.
You know
100%.
What? I won the title without a center forward last year. I'll do it again. Exactly. I'll get this guy, right? And if worst comes to worst, I can always sell him, amortize it, and move on.
Completely.
Fiorentina, meanwhile, have signed Argentina forward Nicolas Gonzalez from Stuttgart. Speedy Gonzalez, as he's known.
Yes.
Jules, something tells me you love this deal.
I love this. I love the player to start with, who did really well in Stuttgart with Matarazzo, our friend.
Yes.
And really improved. He's doing well with Argentina now in the Copa America. And I love the way Fiorentina kind of announced it with a picture, a drawing of Speedy Gonzalez himself. Perfect, you know.
And not a lot of money either for
a
guy who's young, who's proven in the Bundesliga.
I'm surprised not bigger clubs, no offense to Fiorentina, but also went for him. Our old pal Lucien Favre is reportedly in pole position to get the Crystal Palace job. Gab, is it a good idea?
I think this is actually a good solution for him. He's done well when... You know, obviously, we were critical of him at Borussia Dortmund. I don't think he was the only problem,
no,
by the way, at that club. But, you know, you're replacing Roy Hodgson with a guy who's not quite as old, but certainly looks old. sorry, I don't mean it like that. In the sense that he looks stately, he's experienced.
Completely.
They have a million guys who are on expiring contracts. A lot of them will move on. He'll push the kids from the youth academy. He is a smart manager.
Very smart.
And I hope he does well. Brazil beat Colombia 2-1 in the Copa America thanks to a late Casemiro goal. But Jules, there was so much controversy in this one.
So much. To start with,
hats
off to
Luis Diaz, Tekkers, overhead
goal.
Kick.
Goal
check it out on YouTube if you haven't done so already.
Goal of the Copa America, almost goal of the summer so far with Patrick Schick. And great. And then Brazil struggling, not creating much. Neymar maybe not as good as he was in previous games, although he hit the post in the second half. First time really that Brazil faced proper opposition, if you want, after the games against Peru and Venezuela.
Sorry, it wasn't Venezuela. It was 11 Venezuelan guys because everybody else has been hit by COVID.
Yeah, it was not. You're right. And then this happened. The ball hits the referee, Nestor
Pitana.
Pitana, indeed. And stays in play and goes, and Brazil score with Firmino, and then the Colombian players went mad. Like, I think 10 minutes of break, asking him to review it, and VAR, which they checked, and also, and the rule is that you go back on it if when the ball hit the referee, he then benefited from the attacking team to go on an attack, which was not the case in there. I can see why the Colombian players felt outraged.
I think technically they made the right
decision. It was the right call, as hard as it looked and felt, certainly watching the game during the night. So, and then Casemiro scored in the 100th minute to even break more the Colombians' hearts, who didn't need that, to be fair. It was an incredible game, really.
If you stayed up last night, it was vintage Copa America.
It was vintage Copa America, indeed. And we got as well to see the Papu dance, guy, because he scored a lovely little ding goal against Paraguay for Argentina.
Yeah, 11 minutes in, El Papu. Come on, man.
Great ball by Di Maria.
Tremendous ball. And, you know, Argentina, I thought, playing a lot better. Paraguay are a side that always create problems for Argentina, or often do. So I think this is another win under belt. Brings a little bit of tranquility. Hopefully they get things together as they go into the as they move towards the knockout phase.
Yeah.
Lille defender Sven Botman has been heavily linked with a move to Atalanta. Jules, tell me more, because we've seen Atalanta, you know, we've praised their transfer activity.
Yeah.
But Botman is a guy who already has a profile at Lille. He's had a great season. So are Atalanta now shopping in the adult department?
So it's adult, but still a bit teenagers, because you would have expected Atalanta to go and get him a hair and vein like Lille did, and maybe they were already on him back then. Lille won his signing for 10 million euros. Now he's worth four times that, I think, 40 million, which I still think is okay for Atalanta, considering he could easily be worth 60 in 2 or 3 years' time. He's still only 20 years old. So maybe it's a little bit late for Atalanta, but still early enough, if you see what I mean, because then if he goes to another club right now, I think then they won't be able to afford him. So I can still see why they love him a lot, because especially if Romero leaves, for example, he's the perfect replacement. I think playing in the back three would actually suit Botman more, because he's not the quickest to turn his body and in terms of speed as well. So that would be great. I'm really curious to see if this one goes through, Gab.
20 million euros, they're saying. It's going to take more than that, right?
Yeah, easily 40, I think. The British government has reached a deal with UEFA, and there will be 61,500 fans at Wembley for both the semi-final and the final of the Euros. This is the right thing to do, Gab, right?
I'm not a doctor.
If it's all safe.
If it's safe. The tricky thing is going to be what happens with traveling fans, because one of the things is UEFA basically asked them to increase their capacity.
Yeah.
British government said, well, we'll increase their capacity if we can keep our restrictions, you know, in terms of quarantining and so on. They're talking about special quarantine in and out bubbles, where visiting fans are basically going to fly to the airport, get driven in a bubble to Wembley, and then flown back out. I don't know how that's going to work, because it's all mixed with other fans at Wembley. Mm. You just hope it's safety first. The weird thing is, as I pointed out, London is just such a diverse, multicultural city that I kind of feel that no matter who gets to the final,
there will be fans from that country in here already.
Yeah, even if it's like, you know, Ukraine against God knows who, you know, you can still get 30,000 loud Ukrainians and 30,000 from whatever countries in the knockout.
Yeah.
So I do hope that, you know, they can do this safely. And one thing we've learned is you got to think safety first.
And also, a lot of the tickets have been sold already, right? It was the ballots and the usuals.
But they're going to be, so basically, there's a number of tickets that were not sold because obviously they had to, they've increased the capacity.
Yeah.
The way it works at this stage of the tournament, you can get tickets as a neutral, in which case you kind of have to go. But in this case, they're allowing you refunds if you can't go because of the COVID situation. There's also a whole bunch of other tickets which are going to go on the market.
Okay.
And then there's also a bunch of ticket packages, which, you know, let's say you as a France fan, you basically buy a package where you go to, where you have a ticket for every France game to the final, and then you kind of pay in increments.
So if if you're in the Netherlands and they reach the final, you will still be able to buy tickets just before the final if you live in Amsterdam or in Rotterdam or wherever, and fly over if you're allowed to, right?
If you're allowed to, you may need to go in the bubble. If you can't, then you will be refunded.
Yeah.
And hopefully they'll have to figure out some way of giving out the tickets here. Because like I said, if it's Holland in the final against Germany, let's say, I don't want to see a ton of Germans and a ton of Dutchmen. And if they might be, and if you can't travel, I want to see 30,000, you know, UK-based Germans. I'm sure we can find them.
I'm sure
and 30,000 UK-based Dutchmen. I mean, I think that the spectacle side of it, I think to me, as a neutral, has to come first.
Yeah, yeah.
Heung-min Son has been chosen by Ralph Lauren to be the face of the brand at Wimbledon. Jules, I've been told that you're just a little bit more stylish than I am, so I'll let you decide. Good deal?
One, I think he looks really, really nice and really stylish. His hair is perfect, and he's just the clothes fits him so well, and that's great. Not sure about a footballer for like a tennis campaign, although I'm sure he likes his tennis.
I like the crossover.
I think the idea is the sportsmanship, right? Because Heung-min Son is seen as a really
good sportsman,
but also I think fair play and all of that comes in mind. I don't know if they also thought, you know, for the Asian market.
I don't know what
good.
It is.
We don't know, but you don't seem to share that opinion anyway. So listen, it looks good. It's great.
I could care less about Ralph Lauren.
It's fine.
I don't know why this question's in there.
Egypt and Liverpool continue to wrestle over whether Mo Salah can go and play in the Olympics in Tokyo. This summer gap, they're not the only clubs. PSG are not allowing Mbappe to go, or Neymar or Marquinhos to go. I think we'll have this issue with more clubs.
I'm sure Neymar will go anyway, right?
What's your view? They're not FIFA dates. Let's be clear.
Clubs are not obliged to release them. I think when you negotiate a contract with a club, if it matters to you, if it matters to your country to go and win this enough, I think you should negotiate it. And if it means leaving a little bit of money on the table, you leave a little bit of money on the table, right?
Yeah.
You can't go after the fact and claim it. That said, I like Olympic football, especially I know what it means to those countries that, you know, don't, obviously Egypt have been to the World Cup, but don't have a shot at winning the World Cup. They have a much better shot at doing well in the Olympics. Mm-hmm. So as a neutral, I wish we get to see it.
You can see the club's point of view,
of course,
right? You don't have a preseason, you miss the start of the season, all of that.
Of course.
It's complicated for them to say yes.
You should negotiate it in your contract when you sign a contract. Simple as. Right, that brings us to an end. But Jules, we got to come back on Monday because there's a lot of action to talk about at the Euros over the weekend. Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.